Okay, Boker Tov. We are here at United Orthodox Synagogues, and the date is April 29th, 2012, and we are having our class on prayer. I just want to point out that some of the topics and some of the material for this class comes from a wonderful book called Jewish Prayer the Right Way, Resolving Halachic Dilemmas, by Rabbi J. Simcha Cohen. It's a very nice book with each chapter is concise and deals with the material in a very clear way. And the other two shiurim that we had were also based on some of that material. So today our topic is the question of, is it permitted to pray for luxury? Is it permitted to pray for fancy things or for things which may be beyond what we actually need and more in the realm of things that we want? So we're going to learn a brief selection from Masechet Megillah, and then we're going to sort of broaden our discussion to try to understand how Chazal saw, in general, the question of wealth. Chazal being our rabbis, how they saw in general the question of wealth and the question of and the question of luxury. So we'll start with this Gemara in Masechet Megillah, which you don't have in front of you, but I'll read it for you. Rav Huna have asar rita v'kai kamei derav. So just a quickly background. It was customary for people to wear some sort of a belt around their waist. We call it a gartel. I think that's the Yiddish term for it, around their waist. When they davened, to separate between sort of their upper body and their lower body. Rav Huna have aser rita v'kai kamei derav. Rav Huna used some sort of string or maybe some sort of reed in order to create this belt, and he came and stood before Rav. Amar lei. My high. So Rav, in a surprised way, says to Rav Huna, why are you doing this? Meaning, why are you wearing this cheap belt? What happened to your regular belt? Maybe it was made out of something woven, maybe it was made out of leather, but why are you wearing this cheap reed belt as opposed to what you normally wore? Apparently, Rav was familiar with the practices of Rav Huna. Amar le, lo have le kidusha, Umishkante lehem yonai. I didn't have wine for Kiddush, Rav Huna says, and so I borrowed money so I could buy wine for Kiddush, and in order to borrow the money, I had to give something as collateral, and I gave my gartel, I gave my belt as collateral. Everyone following the story so far? Okay. So what, apparently Rav is very impressed. And then with the money that I borrowed, with using my belt as collateral, I bought wine for Kiddush. Amar Lei, so Rav sent to him, Yehei Ra'ava Detitum Bishira'e. May it be God's will that you will be totally covered in silk. So Rav Huna, right, was very impressed with the Mesirat Nefesh, with the, maybe it's not Mesirat Nefesh, but the willingness. Yeah, the Mesirat Nefesh, the willingness to maybe go about, maybe it's embarrassing to wear that cheap belt. So he was willing to forego the nicer item for the sake of Kiddush. And Rav was very impressed, and he gave him a blessing that he should be covered with silk. So the story continues. Ki kalal Rabba birei, when Rav Huna's son Rabba got married, Rav Huna inish gutza have. Rav Huna, who was a short person, Gana Apurya, was sleeping on a bed. Atyan binate vichalate. So his daughters and daughters-in-law came. Shalchan vishadyan minahu alai. They took some silk garments that they had. Maybe they were wearing these silk garments, and they threw them upon him. Ad itum bishiroi, until he was totally covered. So Rav Huna's financial situation had vastly improved, it sounds like. Why? Because he went from having to use this grass or reed or string belt for davening purposes, because he had gotten rid of his regular one to use it for collateral, to the point where he was able to buy his daughters and daughters-in-law silken clothing. And then they used it to cover him up. Apparently he was sleeping and they wanted to cover him up. And so his financial situation had vastly improved so that he could afford to purchase all these things, all these silken garments for the female members of his family. So it seems like the blessing that Rav had given him that day, when Rav realized that he had given his regular belt as collateral, it seems like Rav's blessing, his bracha, had been fulfilled. So the Gemara concludes the story with Rav's reaction now. Shema Rav v'ikpad. So now Rav heard the story, right? Because what was going on? Yeah, Rav heard the story that that Rav Huna's financial situation had vastly improved.
And he was covered in silk.
He was covered in silk, just like the blessing that he gave him. And he was upset. Amar, my taima lo amart li ki birachtich v'chein lamar. He says, how come when I gave you the blessing that you should be covered in silk, you didn't say, and the same to you? Right? So Rav Huna was annoyed because now he realized, and Rav was annoyed. He realized that his bracha had come true. And had Rav Huna simply said to him when Rav gave him his bracha that you should be covered in silk, remember, because he was so impressed that he'd given up his belt, when he gave him the bracha, you should be covered in silk. If Rav Huna had simply said, and same to you, meaning you should also be blessed with the same thing that you blessed me with, maybe I would have also been covered in silk, and my financial situation would have been better. And he was a little annoyed. Okay, so and Rashi, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says this very thing. I'll read you Rashi. He says as follows: Af ata tehemuvurach. Lekach shema, Shema haya eit ratzon v'tikayim af bi. Meaning, you should have said, you should also be so blessed, because maybe the time that I gave you a blessing was what Rashi calls an eit ratzon. Okay, so Rashi says that maybe this was an eit ratzon. This was a moment of. a moment where God was going to be particularly, it was a moment of divine favor. And had you returned the blessing on me, then I would have also benefited from the blessing. So that's the end of the Gemara. So it seems, right, it seems that, it seems from this Gemara, that it's okay to daven for luxury. On two counts. One, Rav blessed Rav Huna that he should be covered in silk. That's a prayer for luxury. And not only that, he was annoyed that the prayer wasn't sort of reflected back reflected back on him. So it seems like at first glance that you're allowed to ask for luxury. And that's the end. That's the end of this Gemara, and that's one way to understand it. But I want to look at some other sources to sort of get a maybe more nuanced view of how our rabbis viewed the whole notion of wealth, and that even if it is permitted to pray for wealth, it seems that the rabbis put some sort of control, or they were at least concerned that it not get out of hand. Or that the prayer for wealth has some type of motivation which is pure, as opposed to just sort of an open-ended prayer for wealth for the sake of wealth. And we'll see that when we get into the sources. The first source that we're going to see, actually, we're going to take a Tanakh, which we could look in Kohelet. Chapter 5, verse 9. You look in Kohelet, chapter 5, verse 9. It gives us a cautionary tale. A cautionary verse on how we're supposed to deal with, or how what may our thoughts may be on wealth. Okay, we're on chapter 5, verse 9. This is on page 1772, where the Pasuk says, again, 1172, Ohev Kesef Lo Yispa Kesef. Umi ohev behamon lo tivua gam ze hovel. A lover of money never has his fill of money, nor a lover of wealth his fill of income. 1772. Again, ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. A lover of money never has his fill of money, nor a lover of wealth his full of income. So, right, if you read this this pasuk, it says that essentially, Even if it's permitted, well, it seems to be saying that one is never going to be satisfied. No matter how much money someone has, they're simply never going to be satisfied. Now, the pasuk does not address our question specifically. It doesn't address whether or not one is permitted to pray for wealth, or whether one is permitted to pursue wealth. But it does seem to recommend or suggest that even if you do pursue wealth or pray for wealth, you're not going to be satisfied. No matter how much you get, you're going to want one is going to want more. It's a sort of a cautionary verse. There's another source which talks about wealth, and that is perhaps more well known. It's the Mishnah in Masechet Avot, in Pirkei Avot, which is source number 2 in our source book, which asks the question: Eza hu ashir, who is to be considered wealthy? And the answer, hasameach b'chelko, the person who is happy with their lot. So that's sort of a self-fulfilling type of verse. If you're happy and you're satisfied, then you consider yourself you consider yourself wealthy. That again may actually back up. That may support the verse. Right, because the verse is saying, no matter how much you have, you're always going to want more. So it seems to be supporting the notion that wealth is determined by not how much one has, but rather by one's ability to be satisfied with what they do have, and that seems to again support the pasuk in Kohelet. Again, not telling us that we're not allowed to pursue it, nor that that we're not allowed to pray for it, but it seems to be reminding us that we may want to be careful what you wish for, be careful what you daven for, and understand. We should understand what we're praying for. We should understand what we're davening for, because there's a possibility that we're going to get it, and we think it's going to make us happy, but in reality, it may not make us happy. And so, in terms of we try to pray for things which are really, really important. And so I guess it's teaching us to weigh the importance, the relative importance of this. There's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, the next source number 3, which offers different opinions, right? The first opinion that we saw in Masechet Avot in source number 2 says the one who is wealthy is the one who is satisfied with their lot. Now, this next section, this next Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, offers different opinions among the Tanaim, the rabbis of the Talmud, about who was wealthy, answering the same question which was asked in Masechet Avot. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Eze Ashir, who is wealthy? Kol sheyesh lo nachat ruach be'oshro. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So the first opinion, that of Rabbi Meir, is the person is wealthy is the person who has a certain amount of satisfaction from their wealth. So that could be very similar. That could correspond very cleanly to Masechet Avot. However, now we go on to the third line. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Kol sheyesh lo kuf kramim umeya sadot v'kuf avadim sheovdin bahen. Rabbi Tarfon says, no, wealth is based on whether or not you have a lot of stuff. You have 100 vineyards, 100 fields, and 100 servants or workers who are working in them. Now that seems to be very strange to us. That seems to be a direct contradiction from what we said in Masechet Avot and the beginning of this Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. Right? The opinion in Masechet Avot and the first opinion in the Gemara here is that wealth is not about stuff. It's about I guess what's called a state of mind. And then comes along Rabbi Tarfon and says, what? State of mind, hogwash. It's about stuff. If you have a certain amount of stuff, you're wealthy. If you don't have a certain amount of stuff, you're not wealthy. Okay, let's go on. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ko sheyesh lo isha na'e b'masim. Rabbi Akiva says, wealth has nothing to do with state of mind, nor does it have to do with physical holdings. It has to do with having a wife who is virtuous. If you have a wife who is virtuous, then you're wealthy. These are vastly different opinions, right? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ko sheyesh lo beit hakiseh samuch l'shulchano. This may be the strangest one. Who's wealthy? Someone has a bathroom close to their house. Right? In those days, you had an outhouse. Right? So if it was close to your house, you were considered wealthy. Maybe the way the living quarters were arranged was that if you had a certain amount of land, you got it close to your house. But if you lived sort of in a public sort of complex, it was further away to keep it sanitary and clean.
And I think this means you have your own.
Yeah.
I think that's what this
means. You have your own. Right. You have your own. So, right. So these, it seems, right, that these are vastly different views. One view says wealth is based on state of mind. The other view says wealth is based on the amount of stuff you have. Another says wealth is based upon a virtuous wife. And the fourth one is wealth is based upon your plumbing situation.
Physical
right?
comfort.
Right. Maybe it means your general physical comforts. So that's one way to read it. And I guess one way to read it, although it seems some of this seems to be a little unseemly, right? One way to read it is that the rabbis were expressing different views. And Rabbi Tarfon may have been expressing, whether it was his view or the view of the population or the populace, that people consider themselves wealthy based on the stuff they have. But however, I'll explain it the way Dov does, but the one about having a virtuous wife, it's very hard to understand what that has to do with wealth. There are lots of poor people who are virtuous, lots of poor men who have virtuous wives, and they don't necessarily consider themselves wealthy. So what is going on here? So
the way to be so mad with that's the way to be, that's the thing that makes you happy with your lot in life, is having a virtuous wife.
So Dov is saying, you could really be poor, but if you have a good wife, nothing else, it doesn't matter. You'll be happy.
Right.
Okay, so let's see. So the first opinion is about a state of mind. The second opinion, hard to explain that's about a state of mind, because he talks about 100 fields, 100 vineyards, 100 slaves. The third opinion could also be about a state of mind. If Dove's interpretation is correct, that... you know, as long as you have a virtuous wife, meaning a good partner who's supportive, then it doesn't make a difference, rich or poor. Again, and the fourth opinion, however, also seems to be about physical wealth. So it could be, we could break it down and say 50-50, right? Half the rabbis who are quoted here are viewing wealth as a state of mind, the ability to see oneself in a certain way. And the other two opinions out of the four are seeing wealth in more mundane terms. Okay, it could be, and I don't think there's anything wrong with rabbis seeing wealth in mundane terms. It doesn't seem to me that there is a virtue necessarily in being poor. But again, back to our question about praying for luxury, then the argument would break down as follows. Even if you are allowed to pray for luxury, but luxury is being defined as a state of mind, then really what we should be praying for is not wealth. What we should be praying for is the ability to be happy with our lot, right? We should be praying or working on our own virtues so that we learn to, again, now being happy with your lot has a potential disastrous side, which is, I'll just say, well, this is what God wanted me to be poor. And so therefore I'm not going to try harder. I'm not going to get a better education. I'm not going to work harder in my job because this is what God gave me and I'm happy, right? So it could also lead to, I guess we'd call sloth, right? Slothfulness, someone being lazy. It could also lead on a much more extreme level to people saying, I'm not going to do anything. Whatever God provides me with, I'm going to be happy, right? Even if it, right? And people actually see that this type of approach can lead to a situation where someone says, I'm not going to work. I'm just going to go collecting tzedakah from other people. Whatever God gives me, I'm going to be happy with my lot. After all, that's what Masechet Avot teaches. And half the rabbis in Masechet Shabbat may be teaching. I'm happy with my lot. And I'm not going to try. So there is a potential downside of that. However, the upside is that one could learn to develop the personal virtue of being happy with their lot. And if you could balance those two, maybe that's the preferred method of life. Yeah.
It's interesting, the person who said having a terrific wife is Rabbi Akiva, who did have a terrific wife, mm-hmm. who supported him, and he used that opportunity that his wife supported him, no matter what, to go and better himself. He became a great scholar.
Right, exactly.
So
very good.
Right, so he's basically saying, if you have a virtuous wife, that's the basis of bettering your lot.
Okay, excellent. Okay, now the Maharsha sees it differently than the way we've just explained it. And that's source number four. Essentially, he sees all four as agreeing with Avot. All four are about being happy with our lot, but they are being presented in a sarcastic way. So let's read him. Kol sheyeshlo, etc., etc. Nir'et lefaresh deot visvarot dahani tenai. It seems that we should explain the opinions of these rabbis. Mishum diyesh ashir shemeasef lichavod sheyelo shem begedolin. There are some people who want to acquire wealth so that they could have fame and be well known. V'liyot nikra ashir, and so that they will simply be called rich. Some people feel that they have to acquire wealth so that they could provide their wife with a lot of stuff, as is required, essentially, in the ketubah. Some people, this we see all the time. Some people acquire and hoard wealth because they're afraid of what's going to happen to them down the road when they get old and sick. And they want to make sure that they have enough to take care of themselves. And they are not going to need the help of others. They will not have to rely. Shelo yitztarech lebriot. That they're not going to have to rely on others. The Ka'amar, Rabbi Tarfon. And so Rabbi Tarfon's view, which was the view that it's about having 100 fields, 100 vineyards, and 100 slaves, kalpe mishem asef lechavod liot nikra ashir. He's referring to the person who collects these things, who collects wealth, who tries to acquire wealth, because he wants to be called wealthy. V'derech guzma ka'amar she'eno nikra ashir el she'yesh lo kuf kramim v'chulei. Rabbi Tarfon is sarcastically saying, when do people think they're wealthy who really want to acquire the wealth so that other people will think they're wealthy? Only after they have this much. Meaning, their wealth is not about, they're wrong. Their wealth is not about how much they have. Their wealth is always about how they're viewed by somebody else.
And this can't be. Nobody has 100 vineyards, right? Nobody has 100% in this thing, right? Nobody has. So he's basically saying.
Right, and that's what he's saying. This lines up with the verse that no matter how much you have, you're never going to be happy. Right? No matter how much you have, you're never going to be happy. Vimkein lo higiel letavato liot nikrashir. The person will never have this much and never reach his goal, his desire of being called wealthy. Ukalpe ukla. So that's one. I mean, it's a sarcastic thing. I mean, if you want to. Basically, Rav Tarfon's saying, the guy above me is right. It's about how you feel, because if you really want to base your wealth on what other people think you are, then you're never going to be happy. Because you know it's always going to be someone who's wealthier than you. Right? You're never going to be happy. So you should. It's a caution. He's cautioning us now. But what about the next group of people? Kalpe shemaseif l'tzorach ishto. What about those who collect it so they can make their wife, you know, covered in jewels and all that stuff, because the person feels that that's necessary. Shetricha harbe liyot na'e b'kishutim kamar Rabbi Akiva. De'en ze ashir. De'olam lo tistapek. De'him evakeshet limuda biyoter. That's also not going to work, because we just learned in Kohelet, as much as you have, you're never going to be satisfied. So if it goes for the man who wants to be called rich because of how many fields he has, it also goes for the woman who's not going to be satisfied no matter how much jewelry she has. It seems to be splitting the needs, right? The man needs the business success to be considered rich, and the woman needs something else to be considered rich. We may not like it. Maybe it's a little misogynistic, but we're going to ignore that because the psychology of it seems to be right on the money. No pun intended, right? That doesn't make a difference. Meaning, you think that you're going to be able to make someone happy, and that's the cautionary tale. Someone is sad. You think you're going to make them happy by piling gifts on them and piling money on them. That's not going to work. That's not work either, right? Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. It's just not going to work. Valzen nikrash here sheyesh lo ishana b'maaseha ve'ena mivakeshet mibalak yishutim v'day lo b'muat. Who's the rich person? The person who has the wife or the household or the situation where they're not being completely, totally, always pressured to provide more, 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 more. Na'e b'maaseha, that it's a pious, virtuous person who is not chasing after those things. V'nikrash here kamram hasameach b'chelko. So who is the person who's rich based on this definition? Exactly what we said in Masachet Avot, the one who is happy with their lot. V'nikavein Rabbi Akiva al ishto bat kalba savua. Dov was 100% right. Rabbi Akiva, who says that the wealthy person is the one who has a virtuous wife, he's talking about his wife. Shaita mistapeket bimuat va'amra luhu yodea tzadik nefesh behemto kishe amrula sha'ali me'ani levushi af al pi, etc., etc. So Rav Akiva is talking about his own wife. Now, what about this last one about the one who has his bathroom close to his house? Uklapei misha choshev sheyet sarich la ashirut ba'et shelo yeh bari ka'amar d'davar zeh gam kein ein lo shiur. The same thing. How much do you need? If a person is built that way, that they're always worried about having enough the next day, the next day, the next day, that's an insatiable concern, right? Again, back to Kohelet. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. How much is one going to be satisfied to have in the bank to make sure that all their needs are going to be taken care of? About omer sheyeh nikra ashir v'yishmor b'riyuto sheyeh lo beit hakiseh samuch l'shulchano v'lo yavo lidei choli kamo shekatuv. Rabbi Yossi bar Ilai beperek hanoder min ha-mivushal damar le minei l'Rabbi Yehuda panecha domin kemilui kemalvei beribet v'kamar le beit hakise itle mi beiti. So what he's saying is that also has no shiur, and so maybe what you should be just hoping for is health, right? That's what you should be hoping for. You should be hoping for health, not for the ability to foresee every future problem and plan for it so that one has enough funds to take care of every eventuality. So, according to the Maharsha, this Gemara is mocking. Well, not mocking, but saying sarcastically, all these other things are not the right way to go. They're never going to work out well for us because we're never going to be satisfied for them. They all are agreeing with the Gemara in Masechet Avot. We saw that maybe there was a little difference between some of the opinions in Masechet Shabbat and Masechet Avot, and it's expressing maybe a reality of what people have. But here, the way people think, but the Marsha, however, is saying that's not the case. The case is that really it's wealth, the praying for or the pursuit of wealth on that level is just simply never going to be satisfied. Okay, so that's a sort of part one. Okay, I want to just look at a few other points before we conclude. Just a Gemara, a very interesting Gemara in Masechet Nazir, where the Gemara will do it. Let's do it outside, not inside. This is the Gemara in Masechet Nedarim. On Daf Yud, where the Gemara says that a Nazir, you know what a Nazir is? A Nazir who someone who promises they don't cut their hair, but they also swear off grape products. right? And so after the period of the Nazirut is over, right? A Nazir is a Nazirite. After the period of the Nazirut is over, he has to bring a sin offering, a Karban Chatat. Right? So the question is, what did he do wrong? Right? What was the sin? The Torah gives the opportunity for someone to be a Nazir. Right? The rules of the Nazir in the Torah, and then the person does something which seems to be provided for by the Torah, and then he has to bring a sin offering. So the Gemara answers, the reason he has to bring a sin offering is because he intentionally distanced himself from something which the Torah permitted. Right? So the Gemara seems to be telling us that on the one hand, we have part A of the Shiur, where we have to recognize that the pursuit of wealth may never become satisfied, and we have to keep that, we have to recognize that in terms of how we develop our personality. On the other hand, we're not allowed to be ascetics. We're not allowed to create a situation, we're not supposed to create a situation where we don't enjoy anything in this world, because after all, the Nazir, who did something which, again, is provided for by the Torah, nonetheless has to bring a sin offering, because God said, enjoy wine once in a while. Have a drink once in a while. And he says, I'm not going to do it. That's a sin. So we see the beginning of the development of a balance that our tradition, that our sources are trying to instill in us between the pursuit, sort of the unbridled pursuit of wealth, which is never going to lead to happiness, as opposed to the other extreme, which is I'm going to swear off any human enjoyment from the world. That's a sin. So we're beginning to see the development of a balance. Okay, I want to see just a few other sources. Another Gemara, Mishnah in Masechet Avot again. The bottom of page of that first page, source number 6, Kachi Darkashel Torah. The Mishnah says that this is the way of Torah. Pat b'melech tochal, a person should eat bread with salt. Umayim b'mishura tishte, and eat and drink a little bit of water. V'la'aretz tishan, v'chayit sa'ar tichyeh, and sleep on the floor, and live a life of distress, of poverty. So now we're back to the other extreme, right? The instructions that Masechet Avot are giving us about how to live a life of Torah, right? Karchi Darkasha Torah, this is the way of Torah. If you want to live a life that is in, it seems that it's saying, if you want to live a life in consonance with the way of Torah, you take a vow of poverty. Or at least live like you're poor, even if you're not. Just eat bread and salt, a little bit of water, and sleep on the floor, and live a life of where one goes without.
Ralph Nader.
So that seems to be a very troubling approach. Yes?
Like living below your means, possibly. That might be an exaggeration.
Okay, so Tanya's raising the good question. What does this mean? Right? If we take it literally, there are lots of very pious Jews who didn't do this. So maybe it means what Tanya Rene is saying, which is live below your means. Could be. Although I would then say, why not just say that? Because this is a type of thing which could really lead to a disastrous circumstances. People really doing this and imposing this on other people.
Read the end, because I think that's the key.
Says uvetorah ta'amal, and then spend your time, meaning not working and not trying to lift yourself out of this poverty, but studying Torah. And if you do this, ashrecha v'tovlach, you are fortunate and it is good for you. Meaning this is the right way to live.
This is a guarantee that you'll have enough money.
Maybe that's one way to read it.
You're going to live like this.
Could be.
So
on the one way, so right away the commentaries jump on this. So just reading it without Tanya Renee's interpretation, it seems that the proper way to acquire Torah is through living this ascetic lifestyle. Rashi doesn't take that approach. On the top of the page, source number 7, Lo al ha'ashir hu omer she'amod b'chai tza'ar k'dei l'lmod Torah. It's not talking about the rich person, that they have to give it all away and live this type of lifestyle in order to acquire Torah. This is what it's saying, rather. Afilu ein la'adam elapat b'melech. Even if this is all that you have, not because this is the way you want it, but this is the way circumstances have turned out. Ve'ein lo kar v'chesed lishon ela al ha'aretz al yimne milasok ba desofo l'lmod otame osher. Don't use that as an excuse not to learn. If you learn in poverty, it seems that the rabbis are promising that if you learn in poverty, ultimately down the road you'll be able to learn with prosperous, with wealth.
That is not what it says. It starts with saying, this is the way to Torah. Live like this. That is really...
Well, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say, no. That's exactly not how Rashi's reading. It doesn't say, kach haderech litorah. It says, this is the lifestyle of Torah. That even if you're poor, learn Torah in poverty, because then you'll be rewarded. Now... It's
a lot of money, by the way.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. It seems to be a lot to promise.
Right.
But what's interesting about Rashi and important for us is that it's not rejecting wealth as an inherently bad thing. He says it explicitly. Lo ala ashir hu omer she'amod b'chai tzar. The wealthy person is not expected to turn their life around and live this life of poverty and need. So it's not suggesting that. On the other hand, we always go back to the other hand. Look at the next halacha. This is the Rambam in the Laws of Tshuva, chapter 7, halacha Gimel. This is a beautiful Rambam. Ein tomar she'al tomar she'ein tshuva ela me'averot she'yesh behen ma'aseh. Kigon zenut v'gezel guneva. One should not think that there is no repentance, no need for repentance, no path of repentance, other than for those sins that have actions, like, like eating treif. That has repentance for. But, or like he gives examples, licentiousness or theft, but things like jealousy, right, wouldn't require repentance, because I could be jealous, I haven't done anything wrong. I might like someone else's car and be jealous of it, but I haven't done anything. Don't think that, says the Rambam. Ela kashem shetarich lashuv me'ele, kachu tzarich lechapes b'deot ra'ot sheyesh lo ulashuv min hakas u'min ha'eva min hakina. One also has to repent, develop better character traits. If someone has an anger problem, or eva is jealousy, kina also jealousy, u'min ha'hitul Umiridifat hamamon. One also has to repent from the desire to pursue money. That is something which the Rambam says requires tshuva. So now we're back to our other problem, right? So we're all over the place here. Masechet Avot and the Gemara Masechet Shabbat, at least according to the Maharsha, seem to be teaching us that wealth is a matter of a piece of state of mind. And however, we have Rashi who seems to be telling us there's nothing wrong with wealth. However, we have Rambam telling us there is something wrong with the pursuit of wealth, and maybe with the praying for wealth, which is the title of our shiur. Because according to the Rambam, I need to do tshuva for it.
No, but the word rodef means something. It means it's concentric to the tzedakah. It should be constantly on your
okay.
mind. It's something you're always pursuing. It's there. It's the thing that you're that's in the front of your personality.
Okay. So
rodef shalom is someone who is continuously seeking.
So mishugala davar.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Dov is saying this doesn't really undercut our position. Because what the Rambam is saying is a redifat hamamon, someone who is pursuing wealth, he's saying that's the definition of their character. Not that someone works and wants to do as well as they can, but that doesn't define who they are. They do other things. Maybe it's a matter of how much time they spend pursuing wealth. Maybe it's a matter of how I'm not sure what other way to measure it would be, or maybe when how much wealth one pursues. Meaning, if one has $100 million, they want now $200 million. Or maybe after one has $100 million, they could slow down their pursuit of wealth. So we defat momentum. That's what Dov is saying. Let's just read the Rambam, the next Rambam, and then one Meiri, and that's going to be it. Because after we read that Meiri, we're going to, I think, come to our nuanced position. Notwithstanding that Dov's suggestion that the redifat mamon is someone who's defined by it, so someone who
obsessed by it.
Obsessed by it. That's a good phrase. Let's look at the next halacha of the Rambam. This is verse number 9, Rambam Hilchot Deot, chapter 1, verse 4, where the Rambam says as follows: Haderech Yesherahi Midah Habeinonit Shebechol Hadeya Bechol Deya. This is what we call the golden mean. When it comes to all things in life, we're supposed to not go to any extreme. This is a classic position of Rambam. Lefichach, Sivu Chachamim Harishonim Shiadam Sam Deotav Tamidu Mishaer Mechavein Otam Biderech HaEmtzait Kidei Sheyeshlein Begufo. A person should always try to find the middle path so that they can be complete. Keitzad, Lo Yeh Bal Cheiman Noach Lechos. A person should not be easily angered. V'lo Kimeit She'enu Margish. But neither the person should be like a dead person. They shouldn't feel. They shouldn't be like a dead person who doesn't feel anything. Lo yichos el adavar gadol shiroi lichos. The person should only get angry over something which is really important. V'chein lo yitave el adavim shehaguf tarich lam. A person should not desire only desire those things that their body really needs. V'ef shar lihiyot bezulatan, that a person can't live without. Kinyan shenemar tzadik ochel l'sovei nafsho, a righteous person eats to just fulfill their needs. V'chein lo ye'amal ba'asko, here it is, the person should not be engaged in their work, ela lahasig davar shetzarich lo l'chaye sha'ah. A person should only be engaged in the work for what they need at that moment. V'lo yekpots yado biyoter v'lo yefazer mamano. A person should not chase after more, but nor should they waste their money. And Lotain Siddakafi Masatya Dosh gives tzedakah according to their ability, etc., etc. So the Rambam here also says that when it comes to wealth, you have to take a middle position. Which seems to, I think that would indicate that Dov's understanding of the Rambam in Hilchot Shuvah is exactly that. I mean, it doesn't say that you're not allowed to pursue what your needs are. And it doesn't say that either, that you have to follow that Masechet Avot that we learned in source number 6, that you have to eat bread and salt and just a little bit of water. It says what you need. He doesn't seem to be going to the extremes of that, what we saw in Masechet Avot. Let's see this a little bit more explicitly in the Meiri, source number 10, which is going to be our, maybe source number 10 and number 11, our last two sources. Pat b'melech tochal. Here the Meiri is quoting Masechet Avot, where we said that the proper way to live is through almost the vow of poverty of eating bread and salt. Kmo shekatuv chazal, al pi zot ha-Torah adam ki yamut ba-ohel, ein divrei Torah mitkaimin el mi shememit atzmo alehen. Torah is only fulfilled and supported by people who kill themselves over, meaning people who deprive themselves of every creature comfort for the sake of Torah. That through denying physical satisfaction, and even through sifugim, our intentional affliction, then they lay the groundwork for their soul that is able to be more spiritual. They diminish, or they push down their physical, their animal soul. Hasholetet ba'adam hashura b'chalal libo ha-smali. Ve'olay de'zeh mashlit ha-nefesh ha-sichlit. Hashochein kavod b'chalal libo hemini. And then through diminishing the physical, the intellectual rises to the top. Ve'olav ha-mar shlomo b'chachmato lev chacham limino u'kedamar chazal zeh Moshe. Ve'kol tamid chacham b'doro karoy Moshe. Every scholar in their time is called Moshe. So that's one approach. Okay, Then look at the Meiri. So one approach is he takes the Gemara, he takes that Masechet Avot literally. That if you really want to thrive in your Torah studies, you need to submit your physical needs to great diminishment, so that you could weaken it. Right? You could weaken it. And then once those needs are weakened, then your spiritual, intellectual strengths are elevated, and then you'll be able to master Torah. Okay. Then the Meiri approaches, offers another approach. A person should not nullify their learning of Torah in order to chase after the enjoyments or the pleasures of their body. However, if God blessed them with wealth, then go ahead, you by all means eat those wonderful, delicious foods, which in any case are going to give you strength to learn Torah. So he gives two very different interpretations of that Masechet Avot, that Mishnah Masechet Avot. One, the literal understanding. In order to acquire Torah, one has to live a life of affliction. Or the other is that one has to learn Torah even if they're very poor, but if one has the means, there's no requirement to make themselves pure. And finally, in source number 11, Afal pish adam tzarich lizaher shelo liyot rodef achar tanugei haolam mikol makom koshe mechavein behem letachlit nechbad kigon lesameach atzmo kedei liyot dato tzilula lo lechavanat hana'a vizolilut v'rov hana'a tavo alav bracha. And this brings us to our nuanced position. That even if a person is, even though a person is supposed to be careful not to pursue wealth or pursue any of the enjoyments of this world, nonetheless, if a person is doing it for an exalted purpose or an honorable purpose, for example, to give themselves simcha, joy, so that they could have datotula, clear mind. So, right, so they're not going to be bogged down by worry, and they're not going to always be concerned. Right, and why is that important? Because if you don't have that worry, then you could engage in the study of Torah and the performance of mitzvot. But if you're always worried about what's going to come next, then you're always going to be pursuing more and more and more. But if you could create this balanced personality that you pursue so that you could feel comfortable, so you could take some time to study, you could take time to do chesed, take time to learn Torah and do mitzvot, then by all means, that totzulah, then you have a clear mind. Lo lechavanat tana'a. It's not simply for the sake of enjoying the zolilut, satiating oneself or just pampering oneself. Tavol abracha, that person should be blessed. So we really have what we could consider here a very nuanced position when it comes to pursuing wealth and praying for wealth. It seemed there was nothing wrong with what Rav did when Rav was upset that he didn't get the bracha back on him for the silk. Remember with the Gemara that we started with. Because if that is out of a desire to give oneself a certain comfort so that their mind is clear to do other things, then tavola bracha. Right, then one should be blessed with the opportunity to do those things. We know that wealth is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, wealth can lead to the desire for more and more and more wealth, in which case it hasn't accomplished its goal of dato tzilula. On the other hand, poverty is a double-edged sword. Poverty could lead one to crime. Right, I'm not saying that only poor people, the only criminals are poor people.
Spending all your time worrying about where you're spending.
If you only, right, it could lead to crime because you have to eat, and it could also lead to you to the inability to engage in intellectual pursuits and mitzvah pursuits and Torah pursuits because you're always wondering where your next meal is going to come from. So it is, both of them are a double-edged sword. And the Gemara, our tradition here, seems to be trying to advocate for this nuanced position where wealth is, there's nothing inherently wrong with wealth. It's really a question of the pursuit of wealth and the desire. What's that based on? And if that's, the Meiri gives it a beautiful understanding. If that's based on the desire to have it so that we can have a clear mind so that we can engage in Torah, then that pursuit is a wonderful thing. We should be blessed for it. If, on the other hand, it's for the sake of pampering ourselves, just for the sake of luxury, then that seems to be a problematic approach from the perspective of Chazal, of our rabbis.
Can I just make one more comment about six? It's just wondering. Historically, this is at a time when there are a lot of ascetic movements in Judaism.
Right.
The Essenes, if you look at some of the Christian writings, Jesus talks like that, and obviously if you see it as inside of Judaism. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, if maybe some of those opinions didn't creep into rabbinic Judaism.
This is not the old... There are people who were engaged in... this is later on, even in the times of the Rishonim, but where people used to roll around in the snow. And really deprive themselves. So no, that there is that trend, that stream that finds its way into Judaism.
There are a lot of groups around anywhere.
Right.
I'm just wondering if it did not become the majority opinion rabbinic Jews. But I wonder if people are reading back into this.
Maybe.
You know, but you're right. I forgot about that. It continued all along.
Right.
You know, but that's the guy who goes gets up. He rolls in the snow. And he gets up to talk to God. Right? That's a story like that.
No, not a story.
Yes,
okay, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.